I am the first person to make this fabulous journey. Suspended in the timelessness of inner space are the thought waves of my first impressions. They will be our only source of contact once you have passed beyond the limits of normal.
Magnification.
Magnification. Magnification. Magnification. Magnification.
I don't have any pre-show banter with Nick. Nick?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, he's coming through the computer speakers right now, so. Let me hook up our theme here, and we'll do some post-theme banter. Our guest today is Nick Redfern.
Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso.
We'll let at least a couple of those things, a couple bars of music, and we'll hook up here with Nick. The timer on here isn't running. Nick, are you still there?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, okay. Okay, Nick should be fed through the audio now.
Hello, hello. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Okay, let me untangle all the wires here. How you doing, Nick?
Oh, pretty good, thanks. Just crashing out on the couch and just watch The Walking Dead.
How have you been, Nick?
Oh, good, thanks. Just book writing, a few lectures, and a bit of TV stuff, and traveling, and in between having a good social life. So.
and being a half a century old.
Did you notice I blocked that one out? That must have been a subconscious thing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I turned 50 last, when was it? Well, it was the 24th. I'm trying to figure out what day it was. So it was.
Must have been good. You forgot what day your birthday was.
I can't remember even what day it was on.
Yeah.
Whichever day was the 24th.
One of the days of the week was the 24th. I don't remember. Was Monday?
I think it was Monday, was it? But I don't really. Yeah, it was Monday. To be honest, I guess it's like most people when you get old, you know, birthdays don't really have any much significance, you know what I mean? It's just, it's like when you're a kid, you know, you get cake and presents and all that kind of thing, and it's a cool thing, but then afterwards it's just another day, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's like that Patton Oswalt thing, you should only be allowed to have, I don't know how many birthdays it was, you get every birthday up to 10, and up to 13, then no birthdays till you're 16, because that's when you get a driver's license. Then no birthday at 17. Then you get a big birthday when you're 18 because you're legal, a legal adult. Then you get one when you're 20 because you're not a teenager anymore. You get one when you're 21 because you can drink now. And then no birthdays the rest of your life except for every 10 years.
Well, that'd be a good way to do it. I mean, yeah, the way I look at it, it's just a day. Don't mean like overnight you change or anything.
No, I mean yeah, it takes...
You know, I mean, I listen to the same music I listened to when I was 17, well, 14, you know, 13, 14, 15. I like black T-shirts and biker jackets then, that's what I wear now.
Yeah.
You know, and I like horror films, but then I like horror films now. It's, I think there is a tendency when you're a kid, you kind of think when you're 30 and 40, you are going to be different. Or in certain ways you obviously are, but I mean... then you're going to be totally different. But then I think when you look back, you realize, I don't think you change that much. I think you just have a better perspective on life, you know, and that's basically, you have a better understanding on life, and you have a better understanding of what you should have done in the past when you made mistakes or you know, things like that. So I think as we get older, hopefully we have a better perspective and we understand things better. But I think in terms of who you are, you don't really change that much, you know.
Yeah. Well, if there's one thing...
maybe other people do. I don't know.
Can you think of any... screw the interview, but we'll get to it. Can you think of anything that you would have changed growing up? Or did that all that stuff make you who you are?
No, I think it does make you who you are. I mean, the only things I think I would change would be where something's, like, totally gone wrong. Like, when I was 18, I had a head-on car smash and car accident and smashed my entire top jaw, fractured it from side to side. So, you know, that if I could figure out what day that was and go back, I actually wouldn't be on that stretch of road.
That's a cause and total cause and effect kind of thing. But just, anything that shaped you, I can't think of anything.
I think a lot of things, even if it turns out crap, you know, even if it turns out shit, something still shapes you. You know, for example, if it's I don't know, if it's a job, if it's a relationship, if it's, you know, just a huge argument or something that went well.
Yeah.
You know, everything kind of shapes you as a person, and at the time, maybe, you know, you don't think about it as a good or a bad thing. You do think it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Right.
But, you know, if you can sort of look at it positively afterwards, I mean, it's like when I was sort of 14, you know, I actually started traveling quite widely. My mom and dad paid for me to go and stay with a French pen friend for 2 weeks when I was 14. I just jumped on a plane, you know.
Wow.
Got met at the other end by the parents of the kid I was staying with, and you know, that was a good thing. You know, it was exciting and it was fun, and at 14 you're on a, you know, it's okay, France is only, you know, a couple hundred miles from where I live. It's not the other side of the world,
but it's another total different country.
It was cool to do it, you know, and I'm glad my mum and dad allowed me to do that, because it sort of opens you up to having independence, you know what I mean, and that kind of thing. And then when I was like 17, me and three of my friends, we had a caravan, or was a trailer, they're known in England, you know, in a seaside resort in England called Brixham. And, you know, we lived on shit and beer for however long. And it was, you know, that was like a perfect thing. You just jump in at the deep end, you know. So, but again, you know, life is about good things, bad things, you know, highs, lows, and struggles, and then you come out the other end. And so I think there's obviously the certain things you would change, but I think a lot of it makes whatever it is in life, good, bad, positive, negative, it does sort of help define who you are, but also it helps you understand how to deal with situations, you know. And I think that's it's like never learning to swim. You know, people say, well, I don't need to swim because I'll never jump in the water. We're like, well, what fun is there in not jumping in the water, you know? It's kind of like you got to live and enjoy life, not just don't do stuff because it's then you don't have to deal with stuff. I mean, that's you might as well not be born, you know?
Yeah, exactly. At least that's the attitude of any... I'm sorry, I'm eating chocolate... I'm eating coffee marshmallows.
It's okay. I've just been crunching on Altoids. I had
Altoids
dinner
are
early,
great.
So I couldn't remember what time you were calling. I knew it was 8, but was it 8 o'clock mine or 8 o'clock your time? I wasn't sure. So.
Sorry. I should have reminded you, but no.
Oh, I don't care. No, I'm just crashed out on the couch. I finished putting Christmas decorations up today.
Nick Redfern puts up Christmas decorations.
Yes, I put up. You don't like Christmas decorations, or you do?
Sure, I do. I just never put them up because I'm too lazy.
Oh, you know. Oh, I know. I've got a big old Christmas tree and lights, and I do that every year. Yeah, shit all over the place.
Yeah, well, we We do it some years, but a lot of years we just kind of suddenly Christmas is upon you, and you go, oh, well, it's too late. Why are we going to have a tree for 3 days?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Well, you should do what you do in England. You put it on the, like, just before Christmas, and you leave it up what's called Twelfth Night. So you put it up after, like, 12 days after Christmas.
Right.
So it actually stays up till, like, January the 7th or whatever.
Yeah, well, ours is, like, 12th month because everybody's so lazy and they don't want to take the tree out. So finally it's brown and it's dropping needles everywhere, and you take it outside and it drops half of everything off of it on the way out the door.
Well, yeah, that is a problem when you get all those needles. I agree with you. That's a total pain in the neck.
And you take,
like,
all the stuff
5 years later or whatever.
Yeah, I saw one on Facebook today. Somebody put a tree topper. It was King Kong grabbing at the biplane. That's a really good tree. Yeah. All right, Nick. What we were going to talk about, and I will have to tell you now, I remember reading about this, and I remember being involved in knowing what the story was. But since then, I've forgotten basically what happened. And what we wanted to talk about, at least for a little while, as advertised, was the saga, or if you're Nick Redfern, the sogger of the sogger. Of the beta, of the Roswell, the so-called Roswell alien slides, because it had popped up again recently because a few different researchers had apparently had their emails or indeed their entire computers hacked by forces unknown. So, Nick, just to make you do all the work because I was too lazy and so you can background me again. What can you give a short or long version of what the hell this alien slide thing was?
Well, yeah, I mean, people who've sort of followed this on the internet will know the basics of the story, but slides have been acquired that do show a strange looking small body, and the film that the slide is actually on has been dated to 1947. I know questions have been asked just recently, and I'm not sure the answer as to, you know, exposure date, but it does actually date from 47 when, you know, it was created. And the story, at least, goes back a couple of years. And in terms of, you know, what it shows, I mean, they're called the Roswell slides because there's actually a connection between one of the people involved in the story, a guy named Bernard Ray, I should say, in America.
Yes.
Who was a guy who worked in the Roswell area round about that time at various points. And so that's been sort of, you know, tied with him in terms of the images, the fact that they were sort of hidden in this, what's not a secret compartment, that's wrong, but look, they were sort of hidden away in like a chest where, you know, if you hadn't sort of looked deeply, they wouldn't have been found. And it was traced back to this guy, Bernard Ray, and his wife, and, you know, so they had connections in that area and Midland, Texas as well, which also plays into the story. And, you know, I haven't, contrary to what some people have said, I haven't seen the slides. I haven't seen recreations of them or drawings or photographs or photocopies. I've seen nothing, but I actually the only reason I got involved in this was actually through something that was completely out of my control. And this, what I'm saying now, isn't sort of breaching any confidentiality things or nothing at all. What happened was that I got a phone call from an elderly guy who claimed to live in Midland, Texas, and he was an elderly guy, and he did have a Texas accent. You know, I mean, I've lived here 14 years, and I know a Texas accent, and you can tell an old person's voice, you know. And he basically came to the point and said, did I have any idea what images of like a dead alien would sell for? And it, you know, it's like, well, I don't know, it's like saying, what would a Mercedes sell for? Well, if it's just a dead shell of a Mercedes, not much.
Yeah.
If it's rusted to pieces and it needs a new whatever, not much again. So that's basically what I responded. I said that, well, are you talking about what would photographs of... no, he didn't mention slides. He talked about pictures or photos. I truthfully can't remember what the actual wording was now. But he said, you know, what do you think it's worth? And I said, well, if it was proved to be what it shows, it'd probably be worth millions, you know. But if you're saying it the imagery shows something that looks strange, well, it could be 10 cents to a 10,000. I don't know. I haven't got a clue. But the person was clearly trying to figure out what it would be worth. Now, this was specifically after rumors started that there were these slides in existence. And so I contacted the Dream Team. And again, this is nothing that, you know, isn't already out there. You know, you asked me to give you the background. So this is what's already in the public domain because I put a statement out to this effect at the time. Right. I contacted the Dream Team and said, hey, you know, I had a call from this guy in Midland. And he said, you know, what do I think this would be worth? And the guy actually provided me with the name of Bernard Ray and his wife as well, and the Midland connection, which is, I think, where they were from, etc. And he also talked about how in the picture the genitals of the creature or the entity or whatever it is were obscured. They weren't deliberately covered up. They were just obscured by the nature of the photograph. And so I contacted the Dream Team, and it turned out that the information that I was provided was real, and it was actually the information that they themselves hadn't put in the public domain. And, you know, they were pretty shocked that I had the name of Bernard Ray and the Midland connection and everything else. And so they, you know, realized that several people seemed to know about this story, and that parts of it were getting out into the public domain. And so really that's been my only connection. As I said, I've not actually personally investigated this at all. In the 2 years or so, whatever it was, after I got this call, you know, I've not done a single bit of research mainly because, you know, research is already being done on it. And, you know, if I was going to dig into it, well, what else are you going to find? It's better just to wait. From my perspective, at least, I'd sooner just wait to see all this material and make up my own mind rather than me, you know, spend hours and weeks and months digging into it. You know, what's the point when I don't actually have access to any of this material? Now, that was basically what's happened sort of two and a half years ago, whatever it was. Then, you know, you had various stories about the slide surface at Rich Reynolds' UFO Conjectures blog, and also at Kevin Randall's Different Perspective blog and various other places, you know, where little snippets have been released and, you know, people said, well, yeah, it's all going to surface eventually, which apparently it will. But in terms of my only other involvement, I actually think this other part, which I'm going to talk about now, which is the hacking part, I don't think that would have surfaced in relation to me had it not been for the fact that I got that phone call. What I think is that the reason I got hacked along with Tony Bregaglia and Rich Reynolds, I think that was because the person who was doing the hacking just targeted pretty much anybody who seemed to have a little bit more about the case beyond just hearing rumors from reading somebody's internet article or whatever. And the hacking occurred this summer. And now, I'll be the first to admit, I'm not an expert when it comes to hacking and definitions and whatever. What I can tell you, and this is not me obfuscating at all, it's just, as I said, I truly don't know all the ins and outs of what defines hacking specifically or intruding and, you know, that kind of thing. But what happened was that when I was speaking to various people, interested parties, in emails, not in instant messages or Facebook message or Twitter, anything like that, just in emails on one of my email accounts, because I have several, what happened was that when I was emailing back and forth with various interested parties, this other individual would pop up. And say, let's say, hypothetically, I was asking a question of one of the people. This individual would pop up and reply as if he'd somehow CC'd himself. Well, he actually had CC'd himself. You know, his email address actually appeared.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like if I'd emailed you to ask you a question and then John Smith at, you know, whatever email account You know, if I said to you, hey, Greg, what time's the show? And then John Smith pops up and says, hey, Nick, it's 9 p.m. You know, he CC'd himself on the replies of the emails like that if I'd send it to you.
Right.
And it was done clearly, you know, to let me know and let the others know that he'd intruded upon our emails, and not only had intruded on them, but was reading them and was replying to them. So in that sense, it was like a goading, an intimidation type thing. But it didn't goad me into responding, because I actually was told that, you know, if you keep responding, one of the theories was that maybe how they got into the email was by responding. And so I stopped responding. But it didn't intimidate me. It just pissed me off to the fucking max, you know. Excuse my language.
You can't swear on this show, Nick.
But the person who did it was clearly doing it to let us know that they were in the system. Now, as I said, other than what I've put in the public domain about that phone call, you know, I actually really have never really corresponded to a great extent about the slides. As I said, I've never seen them. I've never had copies of them. So getting into my system really didn't, you know, there was nothing really there. You know, I don't know about everybody else who, you know, I'm not sure of the full extent to which who was hacked. You know, I mean, Tony Bregaglia was, and Rich Reynolds was, you know. So in that sense, the big question that then sort of follows on from there is, who was it? Now, I've heard a lot of stuff in the last few days that, oh, you know, it's the government, or it was this agency or that agency, you know, one of the ABC agencies. My personal view is, I don't think that was the case. I'll tell you for why, because if some agency wanted to get in my emails, number one, they could do it quite easily.
And not let you know.
You know, without me knowing. And number two, if it was an agency, I would think, let's say hypothetically, there is an agency and they were deeply concerned that these slides are the real thing. I think they might well want to get into my system, but why on earth would they let me know? If it's an agency, I would think the last thing they want to do is let me know. They would want to find out who knows what, and then if somebody did have something, then maybe start playing them. But to find out I really didn't have anything, you know, but then to sort of goad me, that I don't think an agency would do that. And, of course, the other thing is that this person used a Safemail account. You know, Safemail is sort of the perfect thing if you want encryption. You know, it's a company that operates inside of Israel. And Safemail allows you to encrypt emails, etc. Well, again, would a government agency really use Safemail? And the reason I say that is because the Safemail address, when complaints were officially logged with Safemail, well, Safemail closed the guy's account down. You know, it's absurd to think that the government would have to rely on Safemail or a government agency. When I say a government agency, I'll explain what I mean that in a second. But, okay, you know, for a government agency to have to use a Safemail account and then to have the indignation of them closing it down, you know, the government wouldn't work like that. They wouldn't be reliant on a Safemail account, and then they wouldn't be have the account closed down, you know, by Safemail. But that's what happened. So I think it was like an outsider, somebody in ufology. Now, when I said a government agency, because people have said to me, oh, you know, it's got to be this agency or that agency. But one of the things I noted, and you can look at this in two ways, is that the person actually used like a couple of English ways of talking. By English, I mean English rather than American English.
Yes, British English.
Phrases were clearly somebody who either was an English person or, more sort of intriguingly, was responding to my emails in a fashion where they wanted me to think they were English.
Right.
So that I'm not sure of. But all I can say with absolute certainty now is, yes, somebody got into my email and responded when I was corresponding with various other people in the slide issue. Now, whether it was their emails that were being monitored, and so when I replied or I contacted them, and if their emails were being monitored, and they saw one from Nick, well, maybe they had a way of CCing themselves onto the person, the other person, who was the person they hacked. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So it might be that the emails came to me from the person who was hacked rather than me being personally hacked. Do you see what I mean?
Meaning it kind of spread like a quote-unquote virus because the one person had the hack attached
to
their account.
I mean, I've heard some people say that that's possible, and I've heard other people say it's not possible, so I'm not sure. But what it, you know, it could be. Let's say, for example, you got hacked, and the person's reading all your emails, and I contact you. Well, maybe I'm not being hacked, but the person is able to attach like a CC to your email, and then when you reply, they're also able to reply. Do you see what I mean? So I'm not entirely sure who exactly was hacked and who was penetrated, whose system was penetrated, or in what fashion. You know, but it went on for a couple of weeks, and then official complaints were made with the FBI, and law enforcement agencies were contacted. You know, I can tell you that for for a fact. Now, you know, you've probably seen the stuff where Rich Reynolds and Tony had a bust up, but then they cleared the air. But that doesn't take away the fact that the FBI was officially contacted. Now, you know, I don't know whether you can actually withdraw, you know, something sent to the FBI in relation to this or not. I don't know. You know, I don't know particularly how this all works and, you know, whether it will identify the hacker or it won't identify the hacker. You know, it's just a very odd situation. But I'm more inclined to think that the hacker was somebody in ufology who felt and probably still feels that this, if they felt this was, you know, the real deal, this was going to be the thing that was going to break Roswell open, I think somebody in ufology who had the skills and the wherewithal to do this thought, well, you know, I'm going to get this material and I'm going to just blow it wide open. Because I think one of the things people have said, people have said, is that we want to see the slides, put it out there for everybody to see. And a lot of people have got pissed off at the fact that people are still waiting and waiting. And maybe that was the case with the hacker, that they were like, I'm done waiting, so I'm going to search, you know, the hard drives or whatever of all the people who potentially might have something on file. But, you know, I didn't have anything like that. I've never seen the pictures. I've never, as I said, never been shown photocopies or even shown them in person. I've not. All I've got is like a description of what they showed. But where I was a little bit different from other people who've commented is that the name Bernard Ray and the Midland, Texas connection was given to me and by me then given to the Dream Team, who'd already got the information, obviously. But they hadn't put that information in the public domain when I said, does this name mean anything to you? And they're like, holy shit, you know, this is the guy we're looking at. So in that sense, whoever this elderly guy was, there's absolutely no doubt that he was on the money about in terms of the background to the story. You know, whether people accept the story or not, I don't know. But, you know, but he was definitely someone who knew all the names and the players before the Dream Team put that information out there.
Yeah, well, I guess he or somebody claiming to be him had probably contacted them too, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, but I don't think this person, there are a number of reasons why this person who contacted me isn't the person who had the slides. So that means there's like another player or two who know this story.
Oh, okay.
You know, and there's been speculation as to how that could be or why it could be. But, you know, I mean, all I can do is speculate. I truthfully, you know, don't have an answer to that. I you know, I don't have any answer to that at all. The only kind of answers I have are to the timeline of what happened in terms of, you know, passing this, I mean, getting this call and passing the information on, and also the timeline of the hacking. You know, as far as I know, the people I know whose emails were intercepted and presumably read were me, Rich Reynolds, Tony Brigalia, and
Randall.
And I think that guy Ross Evans. I'm not too sure of what happened there. I know there's been a bunch of stuff posted over the last 4 or 5 days, and I have to be honest, I haven't read it all properly, mainly because of it being the holiday weekend, and as you know, I'm one of these people who I switch straight off when I'm done, you know, and
yeah,
enjoy my free time. So I haven't actually followed the rest of it as to all the stories properly that have appeared at Rich Reynolds' blog in the last few days and Kevin Randall's and all the other stuff. I know there was a bunch of stuff there, so I've got to go through and read all that, but I refuse to do that on a holiday weekend. You know, I'm not that much of a sad fucker. So in that sense, that's kind of where things are at, you know.
Okay, so let me get this straight.
So fire away.
Yes. Well, let me get this straight. So somebody had contact. Well, the Roswell Dream Team are a bunch of people that said they were going to get to the bottom of the Roswell controversy in some way, shape, or form using newer information. Am I right?
Yeah, I think, you know, basically, it's, you know, the Dream Team is a group of people that have sort of done what they can to try and figure out what happened at Roswell.
Yeah.
The latest development is the slide issue.
Yeah.
As to what the slides show, you know, as I said, the story that I've told, which I put a public statement out, I think about 2 years ago, was that it was a small humanoid body. And that was essentially it. There's actually somebody put out a mistaken statement, or I forget how it surfaced now, but it was to the effect that the genitals were specifically covered. That actually isn't the case. They're obscured by the angle at which the photograph was taken.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't like somebody had, you know, for decency reasons or anything like that, you know, had done it. No, it was just the angle. So in other words, you know, there's no doubt the slides exist, and the issue of the hacking, you know, that's absolutely 100% true. You know, I was a victim of it. And as I said, as a result, you know, I wasn't going to sit back and just take that shit. You know, I took advice from certain people, and, you know, as I said, certain law enforcement agencies have been contacted. And I say have because that will hopefully make people realize that things aren't, you know, if I'd said had, that might make it sound it's all at a dead end and not going anywhere. Have is my sort of careful way of saying that this part of the whole issue isn't closed.
Yeah, the Dream Team did or does consist of Kevin Randall, Anthony Bregaglia, I think Donald Schmidt, and who is the other one?
And Tom Carey.
Okay, yeah, and Tom Carey.
Yeah, and, you know, I think I've seen people, you know, the frustration is, well, why don't you just put this material out there? Well, they don't own the material. You know, they've been working with a guy who's got the material, who's got the slides. They don't own the slides. They don't have the slides. So in that sense, it's very much, you know, a little bit of an unusual situation in that sense, I guess. You know, it's not like, say, for example, somebody sent you the picture, you the slides, and you as a UFO investigator could do something with them. You know, it's not like, you know, I have the slides, or Rich Reynolds has the slides, or Tony has the slides. You know, that's not how it's working. The owner has the slides.
Yeah.
So he's the one calling the shots. But I said it is interesting that there are clearly several different players in this who seem to know different things and certain names that weren't in the public domain. And
yeah.
You know, so there is some strange stuff, like a backstory to it. Now, to what extent any of that will ever come out, I don't know. I mean, whether anything will ever come from the hacker issue, I don't know. You know, I said the account was closed down by SafeMail's owners. You know, they shut it down when it was made clear to them that the person had not just been using it for encrypted mail, but it was actually using it to get into people's systems.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is an intriguing part of the story. And, I mean, could I rule out it was an agency doing it or some, you know, somebody on behalf of an agency? No, I couldn't rule that out. But as I said, I do think it's highly unlikely that an agency would use a SafeMail account and then it would just be closed down. You know, if some agency wanted to look at my emails and everybody else's, they're not going to be reliant on a company that might threaten to shut them down. You know, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They'd just do it. They'd penetrate somebody's system without them knowing.
Or it's a decoy or something, maybe.
What's that?
Or it's a decoy or something, maybe, depending on how paranoid and conspiratorial you want to get.
Well, yeah, and I mean, as I said, it could be. You know, I guess it depends on the character of the person whose system they get into.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, with me, I wasn't intimidated or frightened. I was just pissed off to the max.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of the things I've actually said to various people who've asked me about this and some of the people who are involved in the investigation. To me, the hacking thing actually has, the first and foremost thing for me, it has nothing to do with the Roswell slides. What this is for me, this is an issue relating to somebody perpetrated a criminal act on me.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how I view this. I don't view the Roswell hacking thing, the slides hacking issue, as, oh, yeah, you know, this is part of, this is all cool, and this is, you know, we're getting close. No, this would be no different to somebody, you know, I would contact the police if somebody broke in and, you know, stole my TV or whatever.
Yeah.
That's how I look at this. For me, when it comes to this hacking issue, the slides themselves are secondary. Everything else is secondary. The only thing I want, you know, is the person identified and found.
What I find is interesting. Go ahead.
No, that's it. Go on.
What I find interesting, sort of on the face of it, and I think you might have pointed this out while you were talking about it, is that whoever called you knew all the names and all the things and that nobody else knew except for these Dream Team people. Have they ever talked to this, what's the guy's name again?
Oh, no, the guy, Bernard Ray, was the guy who, I mean, he's been dead years.
Okay.
He was the guy who worked out at Roswell, and it was in, you know, he was in the Roswell time frame at the, the Roswell location at the right time frame.
Right.
Now, on its own, that doesn't mean anything, in the same way that even if the slide is shown, you know, it's got 47 vintage and it looks like it's a physical creature, without sort of any sort of provenance, it doesn't really demonstrate that the body is from the Roswell crash or that it was even found in New Mexico. You know, yes, it's intriguing that Bernard Ray, this guy, was working in the area at the time.
Right.
Yes, it's interesting that reportedly the you know, the slide itself, the codes, etc., do date from 47. But does that mean that we can prove that aliens crashed at Roswell? No, it doesn't. You know, it's kind of, even if, like, Ray Santilli hadn't made his admission on the alien autopsy film, there would still be people who were saying it was real. But even if it was real, there's still no way to prove.
Yeah, what does it prove?
Roswell, because yeah, it's just a piece of old footage that you can do very little with, or not old footage, you know, depending on your perspective.
Right.
And that's what I think one of the issues is here. I think if anything's going to come from this of significance, I think it'll come from backtracking and researching Bernard Ray and his wife and seeing who they were hooked up with, where they were, when and where, and how on earth they might have come into possession or even had the ability to take these pictures, you know.
Right.
That's the bigger issue. So, but the person who called me, I have no idea who that was. All I can say is for sure is that he claimed to come from Midland, Texas, and he definitely had a Texas accent. He's definitely an old guy. And when I related all this to the Dream Team, sure enough, it turned out there was a Midland, Texas connection. And also, the names that he'd given me were not in the public domain, but they were the right names. And as I said, this, you know, this was put out in this statement of mine about 18 months, 2 years ago. So, you know, I'm not revealing anything that I've been asked to not reveal. You know, this is stuff I've already put out there. But it does demonstrate that there's some weird stuff going on behind the scenes. And, you know, the full story is much bigger. And now it's made even bigger by this hacking angle. You know, as I said, Rich Reynolds and Tony Bregaglia have now, you know, settled their differences. And I think that issue, you know, of being taken further, I think that's a closed issue. When it comes to the matter of the hacker himself, you know, somebody performing an illegal act on who knows how many people's email systems or hard drives or whatever, you know, I don't know how many it was, truthfully, altogether. But, you know, that should not be, you know, that should not be and is not a dead issue in terms of, you know, the legality of nailing this person's balls to the wall, you know.
Yeah. Did anybody that you know, of those group, Regalia or Randall or any of these people, had they talked to that same guy in Midland, or could they identify? Obviously, you didn't get a name from him.
No. Well, what happened was, this was kind of weird. This was sort of the backstory is that when the slides story, not the slides obviously themselves, but the slides story began to surface, little snippets came out.
Yeah.
Now, as someone who writes a lot of books and does magazine articles and et cetera, you know, I do a lot of sort of media work in Texas, you know, particularly if somebody claims to have seen like a Texas chupacabra running around, you know, the local TV news will have me on, give you a little soundbite, that kind of thing.
Right.
And I do a lot of Texas-based stuff. Well, it turns out that I think about 3 years ago now, something like that, I actually did a story for a local news channel, which was on like a cryptid creature seen somewhere near Midland. And what I always do, you know, I'm always happy for my contact information. If it's like a radio thing, which is, you know, or TV or whatever it was, or magazine, newspaper, always happy for my information to be put out there. You know, I don't mind. I don't even mind my landline, you know, going out. And that's why I get a lot of calls. And the only thing I can speculate is that the person contacting me because of the Midland, Texas link, you know, and I'm not that far away, you know, in Arlington, Texas, not that far to Midland. And when I did that one story in Midland, my contact information, I did put it out there, you know, because if anybody's got any information, you know, give me a call. Now, that story, that investigation is the only link I've ever had to the town of Midland. I've got no other link to it beyond that. So the only thing I can speculate is that the person who contacted me obviously intimately knew a fair amount of material concerning the backstory, but I think they were kind of like a chancer. I don't think they had anything. I think they were looking to try and insert themselves in the story and were trying to contact someone in ufology who may have been in a position from their perspective to say, yeah, it's worth this or it's worth that. And they just phoned off the cuff because, you know, they've been looking around for somebody local. And I'd done a story in Midland where my full contact details were put out there for people to contact me. Now, granted, that is speculation. You know, I'm not trying to tie it up and say that's definitely why I was contacted. It is speculation. But I think it's probably the correct speculation, because as I said, nothing else ties me to Midland other than a news media coverage story that I did there and where my contact information was included. And, you know, somebody who lives there who might want to try and contact someone local who, you know, has actually written about Roswell as well, then that would make me the ideal person. You know, that's the closest I can think of. But, you know, I mean, I get things like this now and again where I do get weird calls. And, you know, the only reason I do is because, unlike a lot of people in ufology, I'm not that bothered about my phone number being put out there. You know, I know a lot of people in ufology who are. They're paranoid about people getting hold of their phone number. Well, my view is, well, put it on answer phone. That's what I do. Sometimes I get some of the weirdest rants, and I really should save them, you know, and just...
Yeah, you should.
Them on a,
put a greatest hits together.
Put them on Facebook. But, you know, I get a lot of weird calls. But every call that's made to my apartment automatically goes to answer phone unless I recognize a number I never pick up, and unless it's somebody whose number I recognize. So I don't care in that sense. And by actually putting my information out, I do get a lot of good leads. You know, somebody phones up saying they've seen Bigfoot. Somebody else says, you know, they've seen a Thunderbird or whatever, you know, or
right.
a Man in Black encounter. And so for me, I don't mind that. But and that's probably one of the reasons why I do get a lot of calls like this, because, you know, I'm not hiding behind a wall of secrecy, and which can work for you and against you. But, you know, in terms of the hacker thing, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know, as I said, I'm not an expert in hacking. I don't know how sophisticated it would be. And again, whether I was hacked or whether it was somebody else's emails were hacked, and when they, you know, when two or three people were CC'd on the emails, that person just jumped on at the other end, and so, but their emails may reach me because they'd sort of, you know, jumped on the other person's email rather than intruding directly on my emails, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in other words, it's a weird story, and, you know, it's far from over, and then there are strands which sort of need to be resolved and haven't been, you know.
Yeah. The funny thing, and you pointed this out, it's not the funny thing, but you pointed this out a little earlier. What are you going to do with that picture when somebody says, yes, it's from 1947, and yes, it is a real, you know, exposure on the film? Where does that leave us? It really, the whole time you're talking about this, I'm thinking, where does it leave us? It leaves us with a picture, allegedly from the time, with a film from the time, of something that nobody knows what that is, except that it conforms to what people think aliens look like.
Well, yeah, I mean, truthfully, I don't know anything other than the fact that, you know, the slides exist. Now, whether or not other material, you know, well, aside from the other stuff that's in the public domain, like, for example, that Bernard Ray was in the area at the right time, you know, and conceivably...
What was he doing?
Job, I forget what his actual job was, but he was sort of somebody who worked out in the field. So in that sense, you know, it's not impossible he could have actually been in Lincoln County, you know, at the time or something like that. But
he wasn't in the army or anything.
No, he was just like a private. I forget what his actual position was, but you know, he was just in his regular job that he was in that area at the time. So in that sense,
fishy.
The photograph itself, you know, is going to show a strange-looking body and, you know, the slide image from 47. You know, apparently that's been proved, or confirmed, I should say, the coding on it.
Yeah.
But what it shows and how, or if at all, it can be tied to Roswell, I think the only way, as I said, that can be done, you know, unless, you know, I'm speculating now, unless anybody else has got more information on the slides themselves, I think the only way to sort of take it further is backtrack and research the people. And by the people, I don't
right.
mean like me, Rich Reynolds and Tony Brigalia.
No, where they say the
Bernard
thing came from.
Ray and his wife, to the extent that it can be researched, and just see where all that goes. You know, I mean, sometimes... you know, it's like with a murder case. Well, you got to look. You look for the, you know, you look for the culprit. You can only learn so much from the body forensically. You've got to then look for the culprit, and it's kind of like the same. You know, you've got the slides, but you can only learn so much. You've got to backtrack and look at what else was going on and who the people were and why they were in that area at the time and, you know, who were they hooked up with weeks before and what did they do in the months afterwards? Who were they talking to? All that kind of thing. Whether that will prove anything again, I don't know. I mean, it's like any UFO photograph. I mean, the McMinnville picture.
Huh,
you know, people
yeah.
say it's fake. People say it's real. But even if it's real, it doesn't prove aliens from Zeta Reticuli visited the Earth.
Obvious, no.
It shows it's an anomalous photograph.
Well,
an anomalous photograph, and I think that may be the same. Maybe that's what will happen with the slides, you know, that it'll turn out that, yeah, it's really weird, it's intriguing, it's got the right vintage, but it doesn't prove what happened on the Foster Ranch, you know.
Yeah, well, no, it doesn't. It's like I said a little earlier, you're going to have a picture of something that looks like what people think aliens look like, supposedly taken in 1947. Somebody actually came on the Radio Misterioso, one of the pages on Facebook, and they asked the question, how do we account for the date of the film date manufacture, which is stamped on the thing? And I said, well, film can be exposed years after the manufacture date, but I will ask Nick. And after I said that, they erased the question off of there.
Well, yeah, I truly cannot remember what the full story is in terms of, you know, the exposure and all that. People would have to refer back to the blog articles. As I said, there's been a bunch of new articles posted for people who maybe weren't listening at the beginning to Rich Reynolds, UFO Conjecture Site, two articles at least, I think, to Kevin Randall's,
right.
One to another site I saw, and dozens of comments. And I just haven't gone through them. As I said, you know, it's a holiday weekend. I'm not going to, you know, for me, having a normal life, as you know, is more important to me than ufology.
Yeah.
But I will go out and check it all. And maybe there are some answers there. But I do know that the coding for 47 is correct. I'm just not sure what the area is in terms of, you know, actual processing of the film and so on.
Yeah, the person's name was Sieglin von Defner.
No.
Maybe somebody from Europe or a fake name. I don't know which. Yeah, but it's the same thing with a lot of these photographs and things like that. We have tons of photographs of things. Even lots of people don't realize that there's a huge history of supposedly photographs of aliens. And they range all the way.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's nothing new about photographs of aliens. I mean, some of them are sort of better than others. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you've got some that are just downright ridiculous. Others where you think, well, you know, maybe, who knows? And some that sort of hover in between. But again, none of them prove anything. You know, even if it was proved that somebody had got a photograph of 75 guys at the Foster Ranch, an old black and white photograph from the summer of 47, 75 guys scooping up material, you know, that still doesn't prove what happened. All it proves is there were 75 guys at the ranch, and the weather balloon story is probably not the correct one, because there wouldn't be 75 guys at the ranch. You know, I'm being hypothetical, but again, people very often misinterpret what actually equates to evidence rather than, well, something that's interesting, you know.
It's so hard, and we've talked about this. You and I have talked about this on the show, and other people have, that photos, video, and all that aren't really going to make any difference anymore. One, because it'd be faked. And two, more importantly, it shows something that we don't have. We've got an idea of what they should be and what we think they are, but we can't just say that's that thing by producing it on demand somewhere. So it's really hard.
No.
It's like there's a bunch of things that represent something, represent what we think, but not in any way that can be produced for somebody that says, well, let's see what that thing is that the picture was taken. Mm. You can't do that. It's not like a murder. It's not like a document. It's not like anything else. It's something that's off the map. And if it's off the map, you have nothing to compare it to but itself, really. So,
no, you're right. That's one of the big problems that we consistently face when it comes to all of this, is that, you know, one person's evidence, well, it shows a strange body, and it was, you know, the film was made in 47, so it's from Roswell, and that's one of the aliens. You know, somebody will take that approach. Another person will say, you know, as we just said, well, it shows something unusual, and it's made in 47, and, you know, and they want the further bit of information, or they want something else to go along with it, or more importantly, they want to see something that conclusively ties it with Roswell. And I think these are all, you know, these are all valid areas that need to be addressed. As I said, even if something turns out to be real, you know, like I said with McMinnville, let's just say it was proved that it, yeah, it's a 40-foot diameter disc or whatever. Well, what does that prove? It doesn't. What it proves is that there was a 45-foot diameter disc in the sky 60 years ago over McMinnville. It doesn't tell you anything about who was flying it, where it was from, whether it was military, whether it was Russian, whether it was some back-engineered Nazi thing,
exactly.
Or it was aliens. It tells you nothing other than, well, there's something in the sky.
Yeah, something weird may have been photographed.
Yeah, so...
Well, the commenter said something further, which I forgot about this, and it's interesting. This is my point. All film 3516E6 slide film has an edge code that has a date on it that dates it. The edge code symbol dates, the dates run in 20-year cycles. In other words, a slide with a 1947 date edge code could also have been exposed to 67 or 87. But
well,
I guess that
may well be the case, and hopefully, that if that is the case, then you know when the full story comes out, we'll know that for sure, you know, and we'll be able to take that step, you know, that issue to the next step. I mean, one of the things I would stress is that I don't have any firm opinion on this because I have no way to make a firm opinion. You know, I've heard some people say this is the real deal. I've heard other people say, because the slides haven't surfaced, there's something suspicious about them. I've heard other people say they think they might be real, but they're just totally frustrated about the fact that the imagery hasn't surfaced, and they're basically saying put up or shut up. So you have a wide range of different theories.
Basically based on people's beliefs.
What's that?
Basically based in people's beliefs.
Yeah, my view is that, you know, I can only tell the two sides of the story from my perspective, one being that the weird phone call angle and the material and the evidence, well, not evidence, but the data and the names, which actually did pan out, you know, that was legitimate. And then also from the hacking angle, those are the two sides I can talk about from what I know for sure. Now, beyond that, not having seen the slides, not seen photocopies or nothing, I really don't know what to think about it because I'm not in a position to, you know. How can I comment and say this is bullshit any more than I can say it's the real deal until we all finally get to see it and everybody can analyze it and, you know, and check it out and compare what the images seem to show, etc., etc. I think that's where we're at. We're sort of, now we're just going to have to sort of wait and see when it surfaces, you know.
Yeah. Steve, one of the show's big fans, says a lot of hacking is done by teenagers, and chiming in on an email thread might have been the biggest stunt they could think of.
Well, yeah. I mean, as I said, the whole point was not just to obviously get into the systems, but the person clearly wanted us to know that the emails were being read and replied to. Now, could I imagine an agency doing that to try and frighten people? Well,
maybe.
But I mean, I could vaguely imagine that happening, but surely they would do a psychological profile to find out if it did, or it would likely frighten people. It didn't frighten me. As I said, what he did do is majorly piss me off that somebody had actually, you know, excuse me, broken the law. And I was the one who was the victim. That's what pissed me off. That's why I want to, you know, I want to see this person, you know, pay for what they did. So in that sense, that's one of the reasons why I don't think it was an agency, you know, because opening up the can of worms of letting us know they were watching the system. Well, if it was an agency and it was, you know, by letting us know, if we actually proved it was an agency, that would be major news. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It would be almost like they would be digging their own grave, so to speak, by letting us know they were monitoring us. And then so when we go looking for proof that they really were, if we found it, then, you know, you could really say, you know, the ABC agency really was watching what was being spoken about. And then by default, that would probably mean that, yeah, something really weird did happen at Roswell. So I don't think they would take that risk of replying to our emails and goading us, you know what I mean?
Or yeah, exactly. Or something weird happened at Roswell and they want to, I mean, yeah, if they wanted to suppress it, either means something weird happened at Roswell, it's close to what we think, or it's not and it's very secret, or three, somebody wants us to think that.
Well, there's actually another one which somebody put to me, which I did think was kind of an interesting theory, and it gets more to the scenario of like black budgets and rogue agencies and all this kind of thing. What I actually did think it was an interesting theory was that possibly there is some agency that suspects something happened at Roswell, but is trying to find the information to get it out there and has been unable to access the hypothetical secret group that's hiding the truth of Roswell, you know. And so, in other words, some agency or group wants the information to come out, but they can't get it from the people who are sitting on it. So maybe the Roswell slides were seen as the next best thing, so let's see what the researchers know. In other words, maybe it was that. I don't personally think it was, but I do think it's an interesting idea that, you know, that an arm of the government was looking to the UFO researchers' files to try and answer it because they couldn't get it from whoever was really, you know, sitting deeply on all this material, like some rogue group or whatever.
Yeah, well, it goes, it's, once again, John Keel's quote comes to the show. The UFO research community is not telling the U.S. government what it knows about UFOs.
Yeah, but that's a perfect analogy. You know, the idea that somebody in the government might have to go to the community to get the answers as to what some other arm of government is sitting on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the...
Maybe that's what happened, but I mean, I know there are a lot of people who I've spoken to, and it's clear from when I've mentioned this hacking thing to them, they got all excited, and I could almost tell that they want it to be some ABC agency. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
they want it to.
Yeah, of course
it legitimizes the government, quote the government. Or, as I said, you know, the guy had. He did use some English mannerisms. So, you know, you could talk about some English agency. I mean, that's, you know, not impossible. But regardless, you know, some of the people I told were excited by the fact that, wow, the, you know, the quote, the government is hacking in to see what people know. But for me, it does. I don't think it points in that direction. And I mean, maybe history will prove me wrong. Maybe it was just some weird psychological thing just to try and let people know that, hey, we're watching you. But the thing was, what's the motivation just to do that? You know?
Yeah, well, if somebody knows you're watching them, their behavior and how they communicate with people is going to change. And then you're getting a false picture of who they are, what they're doing, and what they're interested in by making them careful. Why do that?
But on the other hand, as I said... you know, I put that statement out like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Other than the hacking thing, you know, I mean, honestly, I've not done any research work, investigations into the slide story. I haven't done any research or investigations into Bernard Ray or his wife or anything because, you know, the Dream Team's already doing that. So I've not done a thing at all. And I'm not going to do anything at all. I want to wait to, you know, to see what comes out and read the story, et cetera, et cetera. So in other words, for somebody to sort of get into your system, I kind of find it strange that my system would be one of the ones compromised when there are other people who apparently weren't compromised who, you know, were far more involved or allied, you know, with all this and they weren't having the trouble. So I think it comes again down to somebody in the community trying to do some fishing, you know, just hoping somebody might have something. And I do suspect that it was all probably down to that phone call that somebody thought, well, yeah, Nick was given a few names, which actually did turn out to be true, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll focus on him. But, you know... whether we'll ever really know, I don't know. So.
No, we won't know. Are you bored with this now?
Well, it's not so much I'm bored. I mean, there's just...
No,
there's
I mean talking
really
about
it. You know, I've sort of, you know, gone around various points a couple of times. There's probably not much more I can say beyond the fact, to summarize, again, for people who weren't at the beginning, that this phone call, because some of the information did prove to be, you know, genuine in terms of the names that were actually still not in the public domain, that legitimizes the person in terms of them knowing something, at least, that, you know, we know that much. The hacker, I think, probably picked up on that and decided that's why I was one of the people to target.
Right.
And, you know, I can give my speculations on who the old guy was and the speculation as to why I was hacked and why I don't think it was the government.
Well, you kind of did a lot of that.
Anything already. Else is, admittedly, anything else after that is really is sort of speculation, you know.
Yeah. What I was saying was, are you bored about talking about this now?
Oh, well, yeah, if you want to go into something else, that's fine with me. I don't mind.
Yeah, I can't think of any more questions for it because, one, I think you covered most of it, and two, I find it really hard to care about what the slide is because of what we just discussed. And I hate to say it and sound cynical and all that, but, you know, all it's going to do is people who said Roswell's real and aliens crashes and say, hey, woohoo, I told you so. And other people are going to say it proves nothing. It proves that there's an image of something on a piece of film that might have been from 1947 that looks like an alien. So?
No, you're right. And I think again, the only thing that's ever going to legitimize something like this, well, it's either going to be a body or something like that, or if something was released by mistake, you know, declassified in error, something got, you know, there was like a huge file released and something got placed in there years ago by mistake, you know, 3 or 4 pages or something that were overlooked, that kind of thing. But a photograph without provenance is not really going to prove anything. It could be the real thing, but it's not going to actually prove it, you know. And
Nick,
it's going to prove is somebody photographed something weird 60, 70 years ago, you know.
Yeah. What would prove anything happened at Roswell to anybody's satisfaction? I would venture to say nothing. I mean, sorry, to everyone's satisfaction.
No, you'll never satisfy everybody on Roswell because if, say, for example, you know, if the government came forward and said Roswell happened, but the Majestic 12 documents were faked.
Yeah.
Well, the people who still believe in MJ-12 won't accept that. Even if they wheel out the bodies for everybody to see, these moldy old bodies in, you know, glass canisters. Here's the bodies. We admit it. We lied. You know, aliens crashed 70 years ago. Even if they say all that, but then they say, yeah, but Roswell, but MJ-12 was just a hoax. We don't know who did it, but, you know, it's not real. All those believers would be, no, you may have rolled the bodies out, but for some reason you don't want to tell us the truth about MJ-12, you know.
Yeah.
And so... That'll never please everybody. You know, if the government ironically were to say that, well, yeah, we actually have got half a dozen crashed UFOs, but Roswell really was a balloon, you know. Even if they brought all those other bodies and craft out, people would not accept that without Roswell. So,
Well, it would certainly change Roswell the conversation about it.
Yeah, I mean, Roswell's just, it's like some not equivalent of like some 1950s radioactive monster that gets bigger and bigger and, you know, causes more and much damage as it goes along. And because everything becomes reliant on it one way or another, you know.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. Okay, Nick, this is my newest obsession thing, and I want to buy one of these. Listen to this. Not working. Right?
Was that like a UFO landing or something?
Huh. It's not making the noise I thought it was going to make.
It sounds like, I don't know what it sounds like. It sounds like some weird creature breathing or something.
Well, supposedly, see, let's some guy beating a drum. I want to see if we can get it to actually make the noise. Huh, it's not actually making the real scary noise. Let's see if this one does it. Because I want, if it makes this actual noise, I want to buy one. This is an Aztec death whistle. Listen to this.
And this is very unique. So this is the death whistle.
You know what you should do? You should, like, hook that up with a huge loudspeaker outside your window and, like, play it at 3 a.m. or something.
Yeah, if that's exactly what it sounds like, and it does not, and people can hear that at a distance, I want one really badly. If I could, and it's shaped like a skull, cool. Which is even better.
I said that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's shaped, the whistle is shaped like a skull, which is even better. So you blow through it, and it makes a horrible screaming noise.
Mm.
If death metal bands aren't using that in the next week, I'll be surprised.
Don't take it down to somewhere like Suicide Bridge in Pasadena or something like that. Play it down there, like at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, if it's loud enough. Otherwise, you have to take a little amp with you and turn it way up and put echo on it.
Yeah, that'd freak everybody out.
Yeah, my new favorite thing. Okay, Nick, what book did you just release?
Well, actually, the most recent one I had was the zombie book that I did with Brad Steiger, but that was in August. I actually don't have another book out till March of next year. That's the one that Paul's publishing, the next Men in Black book. And this is a little bit different. It's sort of like it's all the information that's come to me I've done two Men in Black books before on the Trail of the Sorcerer Spies and the Real Men in Black. And this one is essentially a collection of all the witness reports, but also papers by various people in ufology on the Men in Black. But where it's a bit different is I've written the introduction for it, but everything else is in the people's own words. So it's basically... although it's my book, with my name on it, so to speak, my role is the introduction and to introduce all the different people, like the witnesses or the authors, the researchers. So there are papers from people like Micah Hanks and David Weatherly, and there's probably about 15 papers, I think, altogether. And then there's probably somewhere in the region of about 30 to 40 never-before-seen reports of people who've had Men in Black encounters. So... it's like a very different approach in terms of the way that I've written previous books. It's sort of more my role is to introduce the people rather than, transfer all their words into mine. Now, in this book, my words, their words aren't changed by me at all. It's just straightforward, in their own words, whether it's a paper or a letter they sent me or an email they sent me or a Facebook message. It's just, untouched and unaltered.
And what's the subject again? I was typing a message to somebody. I'm sorry, Nick.
It's a follow-up book on the Men in Black.
That's right.
The Thought Spies in 2006, and then the Real Men in Black in 2011. And this is one that, people, when you write books, people contact you about their experiences. And so this one is witness reports and papers from people theorizing on the Men in Black or talking about their experiences. But what's interesting is that, like I pointed out in the Real Men in Black, most of the reports in this new one veer far more towards the more sort of paranormal side of the Men in Black, the stuff John Keel talked about, and not government agencies and the real life equivalent of Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones. A lot of it is sort of like really deeply weird and paranormal and even occult based in some cases. And I actually got a really interesting story from an extremely credible and interesting guy who actually had a very, very strange Man in Black experience. Actually, a couple of them turned on the doorstep when he was high on LSD, and he was actually playing the soundtrack up to the Rosemary's Baby movie at the same time and felt himself going in this weirdly altered state, and suddenly this, you know, this weird-looking black car appears in the street, and, you know, this strange, really creepy-looking MIB turned up, and, you know, so a lot of the stuff's like that. It's not, you know, sort of people flashing ID cards and saying, don't talk about this or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm also working on a Women in Black book, which is a surprisingly large number of cases. I've got tons of stuff. It's, a lot of it sort of parallels in England in the 80s. You had this sort of spate of what were called phantom social workers. And so I've got a lot of Women in Black cases as well. So I'm working on that book, and but not, as I said, the Men in Black one won't be out till March of next year. And actually, I'm doing a Bigfoot radio show this coming Wednesday night, and that'll probably be the last one I'll be doing until the next book comes out. I'm sort of going to take off time just to write during the day, and you know, just sort of go under the radar till next March.
Well, you'll probably be on my show because I'll beg and plead and wheedle and cajole you to do it.
Oh, I'm fine with that. You're doing yours. I enjoy doing yours, Greg. And,
as opposed to all these others where it's just a chore.
No, I don't mean that. No, what I actually meant was, because I won't have a book out till another book till next March, there's no, you know, when I don't have a book out, I just don't do radio. But generally what happens is, because I'm with several publishers, it's like previously all the books have come along quite quickly behind each other. Like the zombie book followed on like 6 weeks or 2 months after Close Encounters of the Fatal Kind. But this one, as I said, probably towards the end of March, I think Paul's putting it out. So, you know, we're just at the start of December. And so normally there's not like sort of a 4 or 5 month you know, window area between. But I mean, that's fine with me. It'll allow me just to sort of focus on the writing. And I think, you know, there is a danger that you can sort of be overexposed.
Yeah.
You know, as strange as that might sound, when, I mean, publishers are always looking for publicity. But I think there is something where to be said about, yeah, do all the radio shows to promote your new book, but then go away, you know, and then come back when you've got something new to say about a new book. You know, things like this, I'm fine because it's timely, and, you know, you're a good mate, and we get to hang out and chat anyway. But I think there is something to be said about the idea of overkill. To get a Motörhead song in there, you know. But, you know, there is something to be said of overkill and sort of doing it to death. You know, do your stuff, talk about it, go away, and then come back later. You know?
So yeah, with something new. Was I not supposed to write some sort of introduction for that or something like that? I know I was.
Yes, you were, actually.
Okay, then I'd better do it.
You're going to turn up.
Okay, then I'd better do it.
But yeah, I mean, there's no rush on that. I mean, Paul's not putting it out till like March of next year.
Yeah, there's
just a start of December now.
There was that little part in the Bill Moore interview where he talked about, in the Excluded Middle, where he talked about Men in Black and them being the what he'd heard is that there were people like that the government had hired because they knew how to do certain things, and one of them was, you know, to scare people or to act as if they were something or other.
I think this is where it gets kind of confusing, and again, I pointed this out in the real Men in Black book, is that there are, I think there's like at least two categories of Men in Black. There are the really weird ones, genuinely weird ones, that most of the cases I get fall into that category. And the weirder ones, and they're the same kind of ones that, you know, John Keel talked about around Point Pleasant when the Mothman thing was going on in 66, 67. Now, I wouldn't be surprised at all if there have been, you know, attempts to use the Men in Black sort of mythology, not to say it doesn't exist, but sort of the mythology that surrounded it, and have people brought on board who, you know, can act in a weird fashion and know what to do to frighten people. And maybe they even use, you know, the sort of strange imagery that these creepier ones use as well. And And then if you look at the time frame when all this kicked off in the 50s, well, there could have been people who were legitimately visited by an agency. But that back then, you know, the fashion of the guys was like a black suit, thin tie, and a fedora hat.
Yeah.
And so those, more innocently, have become intertwined with the Men in Black mystery.
Yeah, that's not the only kind, though.
Yeah, there's actually, I think there's like several categories rather than just one.
Yeah. Hey, Paul actually wrote in about 15 minutes ago, and you've probably talked to him about this, perhaps, and I think he's mentioned it too. Perhaps you could ask Nick about the very real possibility that someone involved in the slides, research for the slides, set this all up, i.e. the hacking, by hacking themselves in order to drum up interest, particularly amongst conspiracists. It wouldn't be the first time that's happened in ufology. I find it far more likely than the idea that the government did it or some random kid did it.
Yeah, well, as I said earlier, for people who may not have heard the whole show, I don't think it was the government who hacked me and other people, because I think they would have been looking for information. They wouldn't have been alerting us and tipping us off to the fact that they were watching us, unless they had some obscure reason for doing so. And I don't think it was just a bunch of kids, but I think it could well have been someone who wanted to sort of whip up a frenzy of interest in the slides even more. You know, somebody within ufology who didn't know what hadn't seen the slides, but wanted to perhaps, when I say whip up interest, what I mean is to try and force the hand of the people who got the slides to release them, you know, by hacking into people's systems. Maybe they were thinking that, well, if we keep doing this, they'll release it, you know, in advance of when they said they were going to. But I think what it comes down to is that, you know, the fact that nothing was found shows people are astute enough not to have anything on their systems in the first place, you know. That's an important factor as well. So, yeah, I mean, we could look at all sorts of different reasons, you know, behind the hacking, and they go from sort of tedious and pain in the neck to, you know, the idea of some agency or rogue agency, or just somebody in ufology who crossed the line and you know, broke the law and hacked into systems. I don't think there's any real room for a crossover. The only angle I've heard, which we haven't talked about, which was put to me by someone, was the idea that an ABC agency did want to know, but they hired someone else to do the work for them, so it could be traced back to them. And that person created the safe mail accounts, and so in that sense, you know, it looked like them, but they were collecting the information for somebody else. But again, that's a theory. I've not seen anything to support that. It's just like a hypothesis, you know.
Yeah, so what you're saying, Paul's thing, is kind of a hypothesis too, and you don't know how likely it is than any others. He also said, remind him that Anthony Bergoglio has a history of running background checks on people, and he says, and threatening me, him, and Don Schmidt is not exactly a paragon of honesty.
Well, you see, these are all the issues that are coming out in relation to the slides. What the thing I've pointed out to people is that the story here, for me at least, is the slides. You know, that's going to be, I won't say it's going to be a make or break thing, because nothing in ufology makes or breaks anything. But what's going to be the important thing? It doesn't matter how much arguing and name calling and discussions, you know, come out in advance of the event. The only thing that is going to take this any further, one way or another, is when we see the slides and we know what analysis has been done and we see the full analysis and the breakdown. And if it turns out to be, you know, forensically correct or whatever, then, and the background information on the people, I'm not about the people in ufology, I'm on about the people whose names are linked to the slides back then.
Yeah.
Then that's the only thing that can take it further. That's one of the main reasons why, not just because it's a holiday weekend, but by in general, if you look at my posts on Facebook, at my blog even, or in the comment section of any of these blogs that have commented on it, you won't see anything from me for ages. You know, going back a long time now, because I've got better things to do than just, well, this person said this, that person said that, you know. I've just got better things to do. I just cannot be bothered, you know. It's nothing to do with avoiding it or not commenting. I just can't be bothered to comment about something I haven't seen, other than to clarify things like on the show tonight. I'm happy to do that because in some cases what I've said has been misrepresented. So, you know, it's good to put the record straight.
Right.
But I'm not going to spend all evening or wasting a weekend debating the merits of how you can prove when a film was developed
or
when the film was created or whatever. Because I'd rather get down to the pub. I'd rather watch a soccer game. You know, I mean, it really is that simple. And, you know, I've just got better things to do. Not because, if I thought it would resolve anything, that would be a very different matter. But right now, none of this can resolve anything, nothing at all. The only thing that can resolve anything or has a potential to resolve anything are the images themselves. And until they surface, nothing's going to change, you know.
Right. So are there plans somewhere? I knew there were plans. So it's kind of a, we will release them when the time is right kind of announcement. I don't know if it's even progressed beyond that. And I think it had been moved back a couple times already, the quote unquote release date.
I honestly don't know what the full situation is on that at all. But, you know, if and when the slides surface, then we're going to know more. But, you know, in terms of people in ufology, you know, people have made threats in ufology all the time. You know, that's ufology. Ufologists fight.
Like any other group.
You know, and you find ufologists who, you know, one person doesn't like this person, one person, somebody else has fallen out with this one, somebody else is fucking somebody else's wife in ufology or whatever, you know what I mean? It's the reason why is because people are people, to quote a Depeche Mode song.
Yes.
You know, people are people, and they're not ufologists first. And, you know, people say something on the spur of the moment. Somebody else does this, somebody else does that, somebody's got a shady background, somebody doesn't tell everything about what they do. Well, you know, that's life.
I think you and I have tried to opt out of that a little bit, because if somebody's annoying me, pissing me off or whatever, my first reaction after telling them how pissed off I am is to ignore them from that point on.
Well, I mean, this is one of the issues with the Roswell slides thing is that, I mean, if people want to comment on it and think it's bullshit or think it's real or whatever, that's fine. But it doesn't matter. You know, you could find a new post on it tomorrow and 150 comments, but until the slide surfaces, it's not going to prove anything. All
right.
It's going to prove is that
it's not going to prove anything when it does.
Ufology is a deeply weird subject filled with people who range from the straightforward normal to the certifiably nut jobs. That's all it's going to show, you know, and it's going to show most people somewhere in between, and they have a genuine interest and do genuine research. And then at the other extremes, you've got, well, people at the other extremes.
Yeah.
And not a single one of those 150 comments or whatever will solve anything. That's why I just barely do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, because it doesn't get you anywhere.
Well, you're still involved and you have more forbearance than me because, one, you have more forbearance, and two, you're still producing content and things like that. And you must engage to some extent.
Well, yeah, I mean, I still write books. I mean, I honestly can't say how many more UFO books I'll do. I mean, I'm working on several cryptozoology books, which is my sort of bigger interest.
Right, right.
I said I'm doing the Men in Black book, a Women in Black book, and I'm quite happy to keep doing that. The Men in Black mystery is probably one of my, well, not probably, it is one of my biggest interests. And,
right,
you know, I could happily write books on that. Most of them would veer far away from ufology and into sort of more paranormal, esoteric stuff even. But, you know, if somebody said, are you going to write something on, you know, a book on the NSA's UFO files, well, hell, like, no. You know, I've got no interest in doing that. I've got no interest in writing you know, a new take on or a new look at the Cash Landrum case or something. I've just got no interest. You know, most of the things in ufology, straightforward UFO stuff that I want to write, I've written. You know, they said I'm happy to keep doing the Men in Black stuff. And, you know, I'm working on another Ancient Aliens one, which all of that kind of stuff interests me. But I can't see me doing more than another one on that subject. And, you know, I can't see me endlessly writing books about UFOs for the next 20 years or so. I can't see me writing about cryptozoology for as long as I'm happy to write for. But my interest is an interest, but it's not to the point where, you know, I feel a need anymore to comment on this on that. I'm happy with what I've done so far. I think there's a genuine UFO phenomenon of unknown origin, whether extraterrestrial or something else, I don't know, but I think it's real. But, you know, I don't need to satisfy, in my mind, 3 million people, you know, with what I found out. If I'm happy with what I've found, that's fine. If other people want to read what I've written, that's fine too. But, you know, in terms of me needing to keep doing this, and no, that's why, as I said, you know, I was given the name of Bernard Ray and all these people before it's public.
Yeah.
Even I couldn't be bothered to research it because
it was just one of many, many, many things. One of many leads and things.
You get all the time. Looking into it. Well, let them look into it. You know, there's other things that interest me, and that's really what it came down to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to come back to Paul's point about also the, you know, all the fighting all over the Roswell slides issue with the people in the subject. Well, yeah. I mean, that's. You had exactly the same thing going on with the Gulf Breeze pictures and people talk about this and that, and then the MJ-12 documents. You know, you had people saying, well, this is a real thing, and then you had all the issue with the Truman signature, people saying it was hoaxed by this person or that person, or it's government disinformation, you know, or it's a leak. And then you have people saying, well, this person's not, you know, got credibility, and this person did that, and this person's been busted for this, whatever. That's how it's always going to be, because, like I said, people are people.
Yeah, it's really hard to get any signal through
that. Somebody who's, you know, somebody questions their background, it doesn't necessarily mean the person has something credible. On the other hand, they may have something credible. You know, the only thing I know for sure is it doesn't matter who the players are in the Roswell slide issue. What it's all going to come down to, if this issue has any merit, are the slides themselves. You know, it doesn't matter how many people investigate it, talk about it, whether they've got a credible background and not credible background. It's all going to be, all that is going to be like a collective moot point. The only thing that's going to prove anything or take anything further or potentially take anything further are the slides themselves. That's why I'm waiting to see the slides, you know.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are. I'd love to see them. I have exceedingly low expectations for them, though.
Well, I think they'll surface. I do think they'll surface. But as I said, you know, without anything to back them up, it's just a strange body photographed 70 years ago.
Right.
But, I mean, I really don't know what I can say beyond that. You know, the what it can prove. As I said, unless you do it sort of, like I said, like a, you know, a murder case where you can only learn so much from forensically analysing the body. You've got to go after the, you know, the culprit. Well, the equivalent in this case would be the players who were involved back in the 40s, like Bernard Ray. But again, you know, whether or not that actually demonstrates anything. I mean, my personal view is that this will probably end up like another situation like MJ-12, where you'll have believers and disbelievers, and somebody will say, in the same way where, you know, somebody said, well, the typewriter font on this was from a 1940s typewriter, but the signatures lift, the Truman signatures lifted from the document.
From another
document, et cetera, et cetera. People are going to probably look at the slides and say, well, you know, okay, the image was created in 47, but And somebody's going to say there's going to be like a shadow on the body suggesting it's made of rubber or whatever. And somebody's going to say, no, that's evidence of a skin pore when we blow the picture up. I think that's what will happen.
It'll never die. Just like the Roswell thing. Just like the Roswell thing and many, many UFO cases that have... Like the Trinidad photographs, I think those were, came up recently that said that, yeah, those definitely were hoaxed.
Yeah.
Which they always looked a little weird to me, but still. But a lot of people don't want to believe that. They're just like, that's still evidence of aliens coming from other planets. So,
well, that, I mean,
it just goes
like
in circles.
I mean, if somebody said to me, hey, Nick, I'm setting up a website all about the Trinidad photographs, and, you know, would you be willing to comment? And, you know, and he got into, I can't think of anything worse about getting involved in like a thread that runs for 60 or 70 comments about photographs taken back in the early 50s or whatever it was, or late 50s, that could be real, might not be real. And I've just wasted 6 hours back and forth discussing it. I just don't see the point. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I remember...
I have no interest, and I just don't see any point, because it can never, ever achieve anything. It's like all the Socorro stuff, you know. There's a ton of stuff still spoken about that, or Aztec. None of the discussions can ever prove anything, so that's why I've pretty much given up, because it don't get you anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the funny thing that, just to bring it back around to something I wanted to talk about, the thing that really turned me off, that kind of made me start going on the, well, maybe I shouldn't care so much. Remember when I posted something about the Renaissance paintings and the UFOs in them?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And the thread went to like 80, 90 comments. And the funny thing was that probably half or more of those comments were yelling at me for things that I never said. I never wrote. All you'd have to do is read what I wrote. And they got mad at me for things that I hadn't written and hadn't said.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on. When you talk about wasting time, it's like, you know, never mind something where you're talking about a photograph, but what about something where you clearly say something and then people argue and get mad at you for something you didn't say in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a totally different topic. You know, I mean, with cryptozoology, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
It's like Bigfoot. I mean, yeah, for every, I know, 100 cases, I don't know what the exact figure is, but there's a couple of cases where they're sort of really weird, you know, where somebody said it's vanished in a flash of light or whatever.
Yeah, outliers.
And if you talk about them, but I find, you know, I have people who say, oh, Nick thinks, you know, aliens bring down Bigfoot and beam them down to the ground. Of course, I don't believe that. It's complete bullshit.
Yeah, but show me where I wrote that.
Reported Bigfoot at the same time as weird lights in the sky, you know, or in association with other weird phenomena. But they sort of then mangle your words out of all context and, you know, Nick's the guy who thinks this, Nick's the guy who thinks that, you know. And I put my theories out. But, you know, people then distort it into Nick believes or accepts this as absolute fact that this is what's going on or that's going on, which, again, is, you know, it's... And then the problem is, you know, then you're forced, like you said, you're forced then to waste your time responding to comments that really weren't valid in the first place if the person had read the article, more closely or whatever.
You start wondering why people just fade away or quit or refuse to answer questions or get mad at people and call them all idiots.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you a classic example. About a month or so ago, over at Mysterious Universe, I wrote an article all about the Rendlesham Forest case, but the article was based around the different theories that have been put forward beyond aliens, like some sort of testing of a hologram, you know, to see how the military guys would react. Other type of weapon testing.
Yes,
stuff.
I read that.
Okay. Well, somebody contacted me, actually not at Mysterious Universe, but at a Facebook message, and said, why did you say in your article aliens didn't land at Rendlesham? Because they did land at Rendlesham. Yeah, that was basically the gist of it. Well,
but you said in the article
they didn't land at Rendlesham. The article was just addressing other theories. There was nothing in the article about saying that aliens didn't land. The article basically said, let's look at some other theories to see if any of the down-to-earth theories are plausible.
Yeah.
That's very different from me saying aliens didn't land at Rendlesham. But the person was clearly so emotionally tied to the alien angle that they couldn't sort of see, you know, anything other than the fact that if you present some other scenario, then you're trying to demolish the ET angle, which is, you know, which is ludicrous.
Yeah. Paul now says, tell Redfern I'm appalled that he just referred to football as soccer. That's because he's in the United States.
Well, I have been here 14 years, and I have picked up quite a few.
Yeah, you know, if you say you want to go to the pub and watch a football game, people will be saying, why would you watch a football game at a pub?
I probably couldn't really tell you how many times I use sort of Americanisms. You know, it probably is a lot.
Well, otherwise, people give you a funny look.
I know for a fact I never say petrol anymore. I know I always say gas.
There was a gas station right near here with a giant sign on it when you came up to it, printed, you know, a giant printed plastic sign said it was petroleum, P-E-T-R-O-L-I-U-M. It's a new miracle fuel that runs cars, element 117, so petroleum.
I always say, you know, what are you doing? I'm just going to the gas station.
Yeah, not to get some petrol.
I couldn't tell you the last time I ever used the word petrol.
Yeah, when the lights go out, you use a torch. A what? What are you doing lighting fires in your house?
No, actually, I still say torch.
Really?
I do say torch, but I guess it's sort of certain words just kind of stick. I don't know. I'll try and think about it one of the days. But, yeah, I do say soccer. I always say soccer.
Well, that's otherwise people here won't know what you're talking about, as opposed to a torch where they think you're carrying around a stick with pitch on the end of it that's been lit on fire.
Stick like a druid or something.
Or villagers running after the Frankenstein monster.
Yeah, exactly. But now that is kind of interesting that I said soccer, but...
Yeah, so
that's 14 years living in a different country, you know.
So yeah, obviously, did you ever get your citizenship here? I think you did, right?
No, I'm called a permanent resident. There's different categories you can.
Oh, so it means you're here legally, but you can't vote or anything like that.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not allowed to vote. That's the only difference.
So you're basically criminal.
You can be here on a work basis. Do you know what I mean? You can have just like a work permit, or you can be what I am, which is called a permanent resident, or you can be a citizen. And a permanent resident, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's exactly the same, apart from like voting and a couple of other things. But I mean, for example, you know, I have a U.S. Social Security card, U.S. driver's license. So in that sense, you know, all that is exactly the same. You're a legal resident of the United States, but you're not a citizen. Both of those obviously very different for somebody who just works over here, you know.
So you're not going to become a citizen. You hate the government? You hate this country, Nick? What's wrong with you?
Actually, ought to do it one of the days.
Your
residency card, you renew it every 10 years, and I've been here 14 years. In the first couple of years, you're what's called a conditional resident. But it would be good to be a citizen.
Do you ever have any problems when you travel? You know, for lectures and stuff. Obviously, not to Britain, but like if you go to Canada or anywhere else.
Oh, no, not really. I mean, only in the sense that, for example, I'm speaking in Brazil next year, and I have to get a work visa for that.
Oh, okay.
So that has to be applied for in advance.
Because they're paying you, no matter how much.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah, that's what it comes down to. It's like, even if it's an honorarium, you know, you're still being paid.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, sorry, you broke up a bit then.
Okay, yeah, because I remember Grant Cameron one time was coming to the Laughlin conference, and he got waylaid at the border, and he was not allowed to come in the country.
Oh.
And I can't remember.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there are certain rules. I don't
truly know what they are. It was because he was going to be paid.
I can tell you for sure that Brazil, I do have to have a work visa. That's why the conference isn't until late next year. So something like 4 months beforehand because of the backlog.
Oh, you know,
I have to apply for a work visa and explain all what it's for and whatever. So.
What's the conference in Brazil?
Whatever it's called, the one that H.A. Gervard puts on.
Oh, okay. I didn't know he put them on in Brazil, too. I knew he was kind of on the staff of the what the Laughlin conferences had become, I think, because Open Minds put those on. Open Minds puts those on. I thought he was part of the staff of that, too.
Oh, okay. No, I don't know about that. But, I don't know what the different the laws are, you know, from the U.S. to the U.K. You know, if somebody from the U.S. wanted to go to the U.K. and lecture, I honestly don't know, you know, how that works. If, you know, an American citizen wants to accept a speaking engagement in the U.K. and they're going to get paid $500, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they do need a visa. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. We've talked about this many times on the show. Probably you and I have. And people are saying that on the show we've complained about UFO study for a long time, but we don't suggest any changes to it. And I've already made quite clear what I think the changes should be. What are yours? I don't even know if we've ever discussed. We've complained about it, but I don't know if we've ever discussed it on the show.
Well, I actually think it comes down to one thing very simply, that it doesn't matter how many changes are made to ufology as a scene or that people in it change or how we research or investigate, none of it will, at the end of the day, won't change a thing because none of this has any impact on providing proof of what UFOs are. You know, this is the problem. It doesn't matter how we change our approach. I mean, going back to not so much to the slides, but Roswell in general, it doesn't matter who investigates Roswell, it doesn't matter how credible they are or how non-credible they are or how many people they interview on the record or off the record, it still won't resolve anything. It doesn't matter what protocols people put down for investigating Roswell. The only thing that will change Roswell will be proof of what happened. And so I'm not really sure how or under what circumstances any changes can be made to ufology that will actually have an impact on the question of what UFOs are. And I think that's the only reason why things should be changed, is to help us get the answers. But the problem is, you know, all the changes we've made so far and everybody who's been in the subject for 70 years, none of that has had any effect at all on the big question of what UFOs are. And I think that's always going to be the same.
Yeah. You know? Well, don't you think it's wrapped up inextricably with what we expect, want it to be, or think it might be?
Well, yeah, it is because, I mean, I think most people who investigate Roswell are of the opinion, excuse me, that aliens crashed. And maybe aliens did crash. But the problem is, having a belief that aliens crashed and interviewing 50 old-timers that said aliens crashed, yeah, that's all fine. And that may actually be,
they
might be saying that because it points in the right direction.
Yeah.
But again, it doesn't prove anything. And I'm not sure changing ufology can actually help us prove what UFOs are. I think having what some people would say is a respectable field of ufology actually doesn't tell you what UFOs are. That's, for me, what it comes down to, and that's the problem. People think that if you legitimize ufology and people have letters after the names, that's why I have, you know, problem with some of these groups. They take the view that if they've got bunches of people with letters after their names, it somehow makes their investigations more
legitimate, yeah,
than somebody's that doesn't have letters after the name. The only thing that will ever make any UFO investigation important is the discovery of some piece of hard evidence, you know.
Which won't happen. Well, a couple of times we've discussed is and I threw this out. I don't think I'm the first one to throw this out. Is to try to affect the phenomenon in some way, that gets reflected back to us that we know that we caused.
Mm.
That'd be kind of interesting. Like,
well, yeah, and I mean, there are effects and issues that I think for me are, I don't say they're testable, but they do for me legitimize the nature of the phenomenon. But the problem is it moves far away from nuts and bolts ufology, which a lot of people want. For example,
yeah, well, too bad, it's not working.
I've genuinely had a lot of weird synchronicities when I've in the UFO subject, particularly.
Yeah, yeah, I
and
did
I
for
don't
many years.
Think that's down to coincidence. I actually think something's weird's going on. So for me, that legitimizes something is happening. What it doesn't legitimize is the idea that out of Area 51, weird metal and dead bodies are being studied.
Yeah.
All it proves is that there's a phenomenon. It interacts with us, and there's something strange going on. And I think from looking at this sort of this weirder, more esoteric, synchronistic stuff, for me, that legitimizes the idea there's a real phenomenon. I really do think that. But
yeah.
The problem is it doesn't provide the proof that so many in ufology want. You know, they want like an Edward Snowden type to reveal 5,000 pages, you know, to basically smuggle it out of Area 51. Mm. That's what they want. But the truth, I don't think is going to come that way. It's going to come in a far weirder way. And I think to some people, it already does that. But it's like we're not able to prove it. It's just somebody says one person's synchronicity. Somebody says, well, it's somebody else's coincidence, you know.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I've gotten to the point, sort of like you, where I don't care if it's legitimized. I don't care if the greater part of the public suddenly believes in it in the way that that UFO people, you know, researchers want them to believe. I really don't care. And as you pointed out just now, it's a lot more individualistic. And it's funny, it comes back to almost something Whitley Strieber said in his way, was that the phenomenon might be a lot more democratic than we think it is. Meaning it is what we think it's going to be, or is what we think it is on an individual basis, and it's all sort of a lot of the same source, but coming through the same signal, but coming through, you know, hundreds of thousands of different receivers.
Yeah, and I mean I think, you know, that's a valid point, and I think what it tells us is that, you know, the sort of the quest for evidence, if you like, is far more subtle than many people kind of even anticipate.
Yeah.
You know, I think many people sort of take the view that we're just looking for the place where the bodies are hidden. You know, and I'm not saying there isn't that component to it. There may well be, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe some agency really does have, you know, sort of 35 mangled bodies stored away somewhere, preserved in some underground bunker. Maybe they really do. But the problem is, that's also a very simplistic approach that
doesn't account for the weirdness.
It doesn't account for the weirdness. And also, the sort of evidence that people are looking for, arguably, would be extremely difficult to locate. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? Sort of get a piece of roadwork machinery and dig up the bunker or whatever? Well, of course not. You're not even going to get close to the perimeter fence. You know?
Yeah.
That's not going to work. So, again, I don't know how we find the answers, but I don't think trying to change the face of ufology or legitimizing ufology or filtering out this person or that person is going to have a single bearing on
solving it,
on our quest for the truth or even finding the truth. No.
Yeah, because the truth has as many masks as there are people, I think, is that's bits of the truth, you know.
Mm. And that's why, as I said, why I've pretty much given up, just commenting. There was a time, you can go back and see some of my posts, like at UFO Updates. You know, when my Roswell book came out in 2005, if you go back and look at those mid-2005 archives, you know, I was commenting on that book like five or six times a day at UFO Update, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Arguing with that French guy, Gildas Bourdais.
Yeah.
It was every day, back and forth. I'd get up every morning, there'd be another 10 emails to reply to. And I did it, you know. But I kept doing it up until a couple of years ago, and then it started to tail off. And now I just can't be bothered. As I said, it's nothing to do with you know, sort of issues related to the thread. It's got nothing to do not wanting confrontation. You know, I'm quite happy to spout off here right now and, you know, about any subject. It just purely and simply comes down to what's the point? What is the point of getting up and going to somebody's blog and seeing 20 comments and your name's listed in them because you responded to, as the third commentator, and then from there, you know, you're forced because you get asked questions in all the subsequent ones. Before you know it, you start at 8 o'clock in the morning. Before you know it, it's 11 o'clock and you've got done nothing but respond to why somebody thinks, you know, there were five bodies at Roswell and somebody else thinks there were just three. And so that's why I've just given up, because it just doesn't achieve anything. It cannot achieve anything other than waste your time and prevent you having a productive day.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why I just, I've just given, even on the Roswell slides thing, you know, as I said, I haven't read all the stuff that's come through the last days because of the holidays, and but I will, but there's just no way I'm going to get involved in just spending the days replying to all those comments or offering my words when what's he going to achieve?
Yeah.
You know? And that's not being defeatist.
No.
It's just pointless doing it.
Yeah, after a while, so many things come flying at you, and none of them stick, and you don't know. Then here's one last one. Seeing as how you don't think it's really worth it anymore because it doesn't go, it just goes in circles, why don't you come out like a lot of people and say, that's it, I give up, no more UFO stuff, I'm out?
Because there are certain things in the subject that do interest me in terms of investigating them, like the Men in Black stuff.
Yeah.
Peripheral stuff like Mothman and things like that, and cryptozoology. Now, granted, you know, that's a subject for a completely different show.
Yes.
But I mean, you know, things like the Men in Black mystery, that stuff does fascinate me, and you know, I can keep writing about that. But government files, the things that I don't want to write about anymore are the ones where I think it's futile writing about them. You know, kind of. What would there be no point me doing like an A to Z of 50 top abduction cases, you know, H is for the hills, S for Streber, that kind of thing, because it doesn't offer us any more answers. You know, I mean, the book, not just to promote it because it's good, but the book I'm doing with Paul, the Men in Black book, you know, there are a lot of really interesting papers in there from people who've offered different theories on the Men in Black and, I mean, David Weatherly's paper, for example, that's a really interesting one because he draws some of the parallels between the behavior and the appearance and everything else of the Men in Black in parallel to the black-eyed children. You know, all this kind of thing, I'm happy to do that where I feel it can add something new to the mystery. I'm happy to write about that. But I just don't see where there are certain cases that we cannot really take them any further without hard evidence. That's why I've got no interest in writing a book, say, on Socorro, because what could you do other than go over old ground?
Yeah.
You know, as I said with this new book, it is all new ground, the new Men in Black book, you know, and new theories and new ideas. But
well, sometimes there's things that don't give you an answer, but historically they're interesting. Like nobody ever talks about that Ivan Sanderson, which I've played his interview, he came out to Flatwoods and interviewed people extensively right after the Flatwoods incident. Mm-hmm. And he found out all kinds of stuff that never gets into the standard accounts. Like, you know, they went on top of this mountain where they said somebody said something landed and found all these pieces of stuff that looked like plastic. And they didn't know what it was, and they couldn't figure out what it was. And they were just in this one area where this thing had come down and smashed down the brush. And he said they sent it to a lab, and they were putting all these chemicals on it to see what would happen, and it dissolved in water.
Well,
so
that's weird.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that sort of stuff's cool. And, I mean, you know, like when you
it doesn't answer any questions. It's just kind of a more interesting interest stories about background on some of these cases, whether it proves them or not.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a mistake some people make. They want to prove something for or against rather than concentrate on the people involved in it. This is something I think I learned from Jim Moseley, and a lot of people did.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are certain cases that I think would lend themselves to a further investigation, and that could resolve them. You know, as I said, I personally, I've got no interest in writing a book on the Cash Landrum case. But, I mean, that is one of those interesting ones that could sort of go either way. You know, was it a military device? Was it a UFO? And, you know, that one, investigated carefully, maybe it could throw up some answers. I don't know. Do I think there's you know, the idea of a book, a new book on it is valid and, you know, worthwhile doing? Yeah, but, I mean, it's not something I particularly want to do.
Yeah,
and,
I think Kurt Collins is doing that.
Yeah, for me, I've got a... What I write about isn't, you know, I don't just cynically write books. I mean, people might be surprised actually how many books I've turned down from publishers because it would be the most mind-numbing, boring stuff to write about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've got interest in it.
Yeah. Give me $10,000 and I'll write that boring book. But for what you're paying me, I have no interest in the subject and I can't add anything.
No, there's just not, for me at least, you know, there's no point me doing a book like that because, you know, yes, you know, like we've talked about this before, I treat what I do as a job, but not cynically. You know, I have a passion about it, but I turn my passion into a job. But, yes, I do a lot of stuff which is just regular journalism, you know, stuff you're assigned to do. But in terms of a large project like a book, you know, I'm not going to spend 6 months writing a book that a publisher wants me to write if I have absolutely no interest in the subject at all. It's just pointless. So there are a lot of aspects of ufology I find pointless. You know, so
yeah.
I'm not going to write about them. Or in a more important case, a more important aspect, I should say, a lot of things I won't write about is where I'm not able to add nothing new to it. You know, or it's just going to go over old ground. I think those are the two worst things you can do, is just go over old ground or just not add anything new, which is kind of, you know, a similar thing anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Rendlesham. Could I write a book on Rendlesham? Well, yeah, of course I would. I mean, of course I could. But, I mean, would I? No, I wouldn't, because I have no new scoop on Roswell. I have nothing new to say about the case at all.
Yeah.
Now, somebody else who may have dug deep has got something really cool to say. But I think, for me, you know, I'll always write about certain aspects of the subject, but they've got to be aspects that interest me. But if, am I going to investigate every alleged UFO crash under the sun and every alleged hidden document? Well, no, because, you know, let somebody else do it. You know, if I'm interested, fine. If I'm not, you know, it's not a crime to only to be semi-interested in or and in certain parts of the UFO subject and very interested.
Uh-oh, Nick's breaking up.
In minor parts of it. But it's kind of like just saying that, you know, really when it comes down to minor, you know, things that interest me just to a minor degree, I'm not going to write about them because, you know, you've got to have some personal satisfaction for me. Well, I have to, at least if I'm writing something, you've got to have personal satisfaction as well. Doing an overview of Rendlesham that has nothing new offers no personal satisfaction.
Yeah.
So I'll focus, as I've always done, you know, I've never written a book that I haven't wanted to write. You know, truthfully, I haven't. There's some books with hindsight I wish I'd written a little bit differently, but there's not one that I regret writing. Now, there are some books that I've been asked to write that I would have regretted writing had I, you know, taken them on board. But I just said, no, you know, that's not one for me. Try somebody else. And I think that's how it should be. If you're a writer and if you write for the right reasons, you know, you don't want to just be going through the motions, because that don't do anybody any good. I mean, the contactee movement, as you know, that fascinates me.
Yeah, me too.
Crop circles, you know, I find the whole crop circle thing interesting from the different angles and parallels. If somebody asked me to write a book about black triangles, I'd give them the finger, you know what I mean? I just, you know, sort of a book, a fact, a statistics type book on black triangle sightings the last 30 years. You know, you might as well just watch paint dry.
Well, actually, somebody did write that book.
Well, I mean, if somebody wants to write about it, they're interested in it, fine, but that's not me.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of anything worse than collecting 200 black triangle reports. You know, the first one begins, on the 9th of June, Mr. Smith saw this flying over Minneapolis, and then the next one's on, you know, August the 18th, 1977, police officer so-and-so. I mean, if somebody wants to do a statistical analysis and they feel it's going to benefit the community, well, that's their opinion. But my opinion is, if somebody asked me to write that book, I'd rather have my fingernails pulled out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wouldn't get anything from write. I wouldn't get any satisfaction or sense of achievement from doing something like that. But that, you know, that's just me. Somebody else might say there's a major calling for a, you know, an extremely statistical book on flying triangles. And I wouldn't dispute from a scientific perspective of, like, looking at the trends of where...
Yeah, get it on the record.
The sightings occurred and the frequency and the locations, you know, frequency to military bases, that kind of thing. So I'm not saying it's not worth doing. What I'm just saying is, if you ask me, would I have any interest in doing it, I could be not less disinterested if I tried, you know?
Yeah. I would like to wind this down because I want to go home and go to sleep. But... Steve Ray, one of our combatters, said, It seems kind of what he said here seems, I got to think about it for a second. It seems like a non sequitur. Isn't the desire for disclosure at spiritual loggerheads with the synchronicity experience? What?
Well, maybe, I think maybe what Steve is saying is the disclosure movement looks at things very much from like a nuts and bolts angle, and maybe
right.
The synchronicity thing is very different angle. If that is what Steve means,
I think it is what he means.
Agree with him. Yeah, and I'll tell you why I agree is because I actually had this debate which conference? It was a conference I did about a year ago. I forget which one it was now, but we had a panel debate all about the merits of disclosure and etc. And I pointed this issue out about the weirder aspects of ufology.
Yeah.
And I said the problem I have, well, there are actually several problems I have with the whole disclosure movement. One is the naivety of shouting loud somehow is going to make those who may be sitting on this truth or that truth to release it. You know, I mean, maybe it's me being cynical, but, you know, just saying, oh, well, we want you to release this information and here's 5,000 signatures that someone's actually, if somebody's sitting on some secret truth of Roswell, that they're going to release it. You know, it's just absurd, to that just that naivety of the people. But the other issue is that one of the interesting things you find about the people in the disclosure movement is that they're extremely based around the whole nuts and bolts angle.
Yes.
Crashed UFOs, dead aliens, back engineering, radar reports, pilot encounters, that kind of thing. What I found is that many of those people within that field don't have much time for the weirder, you know, the synchronicities and the parallels between, clear parallels between like the Men in Black mystery and certain sort of occult-based esoteric things as well. That kind of thing. And
yeah, well, it makes
the
them seem weird.
I see it is that the disclosure movement is pushing for disclosure as they see it.
Yes.
Dead aliens in Area 51, they're not prepared for what could happen if these weirder aspects come out. I mean, for example, you know, I mean, if you take Whitley Strieber's books like Communion and Transformation, now, I actually like Strieber's books. I think, you know, I know some people take a different approach. What I think Communion and Transformation, both those books particularly did, and I think why, from my perspective, Strieber did us a favor, was because he presented the abduction phenomenon in a very different way to people like Bud Hopkins did, in the sense it wasn't all about scientists taking DNA. You know, he talked about how these entities, these greys, may have some sort of connection to the afterlife and, you know, the anti-synchronicities and weird stuff like this. And that, you know, if you read Communion, a lot of people who I've turned on to Communion thought they were just going to read another book about abductions. And that book's very different. And I think this is a problem with the disclosure movement. They're pushing for the release of what they think is going on, which is like a modern-day equivalent of what Kehoe used to write about, that kind of thing. What they're not doing is taking into consideration that they may be opening a door to something so weirdly strange that we call paranormal, because we don't really understand it, that goes far beyond what their expectations are. And their expectations are actually quite simplistic, you know. Roswell, memory metal, alien bodies, cattle mutilations are done by aliens, and you know, that's it. And I think that's the issue I have with the disclosure movement. Disclosure is based upon what they think it's going to be, and they don't give room for what it might actually be.
Yeah, and I think the other part of that is they don't want to be associated with weirdos.
Well,
I'm being facetious, but what'd you say?
I said they're in ufology for a start, so I mean, yeah. you know, you're not going to get away from weirdos. But
yeah,
I mean,
I'm sort of half joking.
There are weirdos in the subject, and unfortunately, you know, some of the weirdos tend to be the ones who get most profiled, unfortunately. But
well, they're loudest.
You know, I found this before where, you know, some of the people who are the most level-headed when it comes to the nuts and bolts angle, you're right, they won't touch anything that's stranger, purely and simply because, you know, they try and it's going to affect their sort of grounded approach, if you like. So in other words, I think it's more of a concern as to what effect it's going to have on them if they embrace this or they embrace that. Well, to me, that's like a lazy, cowardly approach.
Yeah.
You know, if there are weird aspects to a case or an event, or there's a classic UFO case where that has paranormal overtones, well, don't ignore it because, you know, it doesn't tie in with the idea of tripod landing marks and soil samples, you know. I mean, people who ignore evidence because it doesn't go down what they already accept, they're just basically shitty cowards, you know what I mean? That's all they are. They're just cowardly people who are frightened to have their belief systems upset. And I don't really have any sympathy for them, you know, if people take them to task for not accepting all the information, or not accepting all the information, but at least addressing all the information.
Yeah. Well, this is a normal human reaction. I'm going to ignore the stuff that doesn't fit in with what I'm trying to promote.
Yeah. Yeah, right, and I don't have much time for that or for the people who take that approach because, again, you'll never change their minds. I've got far better things to do, like watch a football game. but I don't know where this will lead ufology to. It may lead ufology to nowhere. You know, there could be people 50 years from now asking the same questions and
going
around in circles. But, not that we're going to know anyway, probably, unless we sort of eat really healthily and exercise and take care for the next 50 years. But, I mean, what I would say is that, you know, for all the comments and attacks that are made on ufology as a movement, yes, many of them are extremely valid, but none of them are going to change the issue of what UFOs are.
Yeah.
Only proof of what the UFOs are is going to change that.
Yeah.
And we need to understand that distinction.
Yeah, well, most people don't, and it's probably not going to change. And I actually sent an article to Ken Thomas recently that he's going to put in a brand new issue of Steam Shovel, which was a book.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it coming out? Is it a magazine again?
Yes.
What?
A printed edition of the magazine. What I sent him was basically a long essay, which was an excerpt from an introduction to a book I was going to write, but I didn't write it because a whole bunch of other people started writing the same thing. And it was basically, what's wrong with ufology? What are the other things we could be looking at? What merit do they have? What makes them interesting? Anyway, yeah, the point was that there's so many aspects to it that people choose to ignore that it's like this many tentacled thing that's all, you know, not even that. It's just everybody off in their own little corner looking at something from 100 miles away through the telescope of their beliefs, through the backwards, out of focus telescope of their own belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's not going to change.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, one of the parallels I would make is like with the Betty and Barney Hill case. You know, it's like a lot of people have dismissed like the Strieber stuff, talking about the life after death stuff, because they think, well, that's just too bizarre. But they accept something like the star map in the Betty and Barney Hill case. You know, the aliens have got a map. No, it's like even NASA astronauts didn't actually need a map to go to the moon. And yet somehow these aliens have come from, you know, how many light years away, I've got a map. But that's absurd.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what people expect.
Somebody who says, well, it's absurd to think aliens are somehow connected to the afterlife, it's equally absurd to say that aliens, you know, travel the universe using a fucking map.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never heard anything any more ridiculous in my entire life. that doesn't mean that the person, you know, the Hills lied. I don't believe they did. I think it was more along the lines of something was either projected into their mind, or they were shown something.
And they chose to believe.
To show something they could relate to.
Yeah.
But actually having any bearing or merit on allowing the aliens to sort of traverse the universe, you know, you just don't need a map to do that, because space isn't like that. You're not traveling from point A to point B. You know, you're traveling where the star or the planet is going to be, you know, further down the line, because it's traveling in an orbit, you know.
Right.
That's one of the things people forget when it comes to something like a map. You're not like jumping on the local highway from A to B. You know, it's like when the astronauts went to the moon, they were targeted to fly to where the moon was going to be when they reached that, you know, that distance.
Yeah.
Well,
you're also assuming that
a tricky issue.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of assumptions.
There's so many absurdities and things to accept, but it's like one person's absurdity is another person's bit of logic, you know.
Right, exactly. It's just like we've been saying, it goes back to belief systems and what people expect to see and what people want to hear, want to see, and want to prove, and everything in this very strange world being stuffed into whatever little box they've tried to make for it. And and if you're not inside that box with them and don't own that same box with the same label on it, everybody else that doesn't have that looks stupid, crazy, or horribly misguided to them.
And of course, the major thing, which is a real pain in the neck, is like I said with the Rendlesham article I wrote, where when people have a different belief system, even if you offer a different theory or an idea, they take the view that you're questioning the validity of the alien angle. Do you see what I mean? And that's what really pisses me off as well. You know, it's like you cannot write about a classic case without being accused of trying to demolish it. You know,
yeah.
You're not trying to demolish it. You're just offering alternative views that are worth suggesting and discussing. You know, it's like a very childish kind of, don't upset the apple cart because this is what ufology says is happening. I mean, I've seen that at, I'm sure you have as well, conferences where, you know, there's some speaker and another speaker, and they, you know, one person says this, one person says that, and then they won't, you know, they go sort of head-to-head, so to speak. And, you know, when you actually look at it, it just all comes down to, well, you're affecting my belief system, you know. It's not actually about just, let's look at the case logically.
Yeah. You
know, that's like the Cash Landry one's a classic example. I mean, as I said, that case could go either way. But if you even dared suggest the idea that Cash Landry was a military vehicle, a certain percentage of people are going to say, no, it was alien.
Yeah.
You know? And then, not because you're debunking it, you're just bringing it up because of the allegations that there were 20-something helicopters in the area at the time, double-rotor military ones. So,
yes,
of course you've got to bring the theory up. But no, they're like, why are you debunking that classic case? It's like, yeah, oh, fuck off, you know.
Yeah, yeah, everything goes in circles. Hey, Nick, you've been on with me for an hour and a half. Or, I'm sorry, 2.5 hours.
2 hours and a half.
Yeah, 2.5 hours. I think you might want to go to sleep because I think I do.
All right.
That's how I've been ending these interviews.
6 hours. So.
Yeah. That's how I've been ending these interviews recently, or shows like, I need to get home because I have to wake up, and I would like to talk the rest of the night.
That's cool.
And
we've all got lives away from the subject, thank God, as well.
Yes, thank God. I hope we answered questions about the subject at hand, at least the way we started it with the Roswell slides, and I think we went over it exhaustively, at least Nick's view of it. And if there's any more questions, either put them in the email or put them up on the Radio Mysterioso sites on Facebook. Nick, always a pleasure to talk to you, and we should talk again off the show sometime soon here and catch up and see how we're doing on various things. All right, Nick. Thanks so much.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on again, Greg.
Well, thanks for saying you'd be on at such short notice after our quote-unquote mystery guest said that he couldn't make it. Thanks so much.
All right. Talk to you soon, Greg.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Ah, Nick was on again. It's always fun to have Nick Redfern on because we always find a lot of stuff to talk about. Thanks for listening. Thanks again to Nick, Roddy Mysterioso, here on killradio.org.
Ensemble les morceaux, le nez, les yeux, les lèvres et la peau, les connexions nerveuses fixées au cou par des écrous. Fallait un cerveau aussi grand qu'Einstein pour en greffer un autre à Frankenstein, faire de plusieurs cadavres en un instant un mort vivant. Mais il fallait aussi un assistant qui, ayant brisé le cœur par accident, celui d'un assassin, assassin. Fallait un cerveau aussi grand qu'Einstein pour en greffer un autre à Frankenstein, faire de plusieurs cadavres en un instant un mort vivant. Après quelques décharges électriques, il se mit à rouler des mécaniques, puis renversant bec, benzène et cornu, il disparut.
Here's one for Nick.